Are you ready to level up and achieve peak performance? Let Healing Within help assist you to be at the top of your game. Pair massage and assisted practitioner stretching to be one step above your competitors. Go to healingwithinkc.com to book a session.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm gonna tell you
what you need to know. Our need to know brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley Davidson North, I-29 at Tiffany Springs, just south of the airport. That's where you will find the biggest selection of beautiful Harley Davidson motorcycles. Rick Worth, Chris Guerin, and the guys. You are family. The moment you walk in the door, you'll see the difference. Get that beautiful Harley. It is time to ride Kansas City in. Worth Harley Davidson North has the best selection. Nobody works harder on a trade. If you got a title, they'll talk trade. Nobody does a better job of getting you finance than the guys at Worth. Worth Harley Davidson North for the Harley, for everything that goes on the Harley and everything that goes on you when you go on the Harley. It's Worth Harley Davidson North. Let's start things off with Mike Matheny, Royals losers of 8 in a row. He met with the media yesterday. George Brett told Todd Lebo that the Royals need to, quote, try easier. Today, Mike Matheny says that's sound advice, but can be difficult to pull off.
If George said it, it's true. So we'll roll with that. A lot easier said than done, though, too, right? And it's one of those where when you're out there competing, you only have one level that you can go, and that. There's just a lot of pride, and you can't help but fall into that natural tendency that most players have that allowed them to get here, which is just, I got to go. I got to do something different. I got to go harder. But I think with wisdom and experience like what George has been able to experience and feel firsthand, it takes some time. And I think that same thing could be said for teams, younger teams. Need to understand the process of how to go through tough times. It's not going to be their last, but the more often you go through it, you take close notes, whether it's in a personal slump, bad streak, or whether it's one as a team, you're always learning and growing of, okay, here's where we were. This is what we need to do to get through this. And George's wisdom, has to be felt. They have to internalize that, and usually that's just from experiences. And it's really hard to learn from experiences you've never had. So some of them are going through this for the first time at the major league level. And what we're continuing to teach in here is don't forget who we are, and don't let one bad week change the way that we think.
This is the time that guys like Hunter Dozier, Jorge Soler, certainly Salvador Perez and Carlos Santana have to lead the way. It just seems like those guys aren't getting it done. Brady Singer gets the call to try to be the stopper, and Brady Singer's been outstanding for the Kansas City Royals this year. 1-3, yes, but a 3.41 ERA, a whip down below 1.20, 29 innings, 23 hits, 11 walks, 29 Ks, and at times has been the Royals' best pitcher. It will fall on him tonight to try to get things going for the Royals. Last time we saw Singer, he was getting tossed from the game. Mike Matheny says he likes Singer's emotions, but says he's got to control him as well.
That's another fine line, because that's part of what makes Brady Brady and to have the success that he's had. So you don't want to completely take that away from him. But where we need to make the adjustments is if you're ever seeing that emotion get in the way of what he's able to do. And if the emotion starts to take away from his stuff, or can he add to it? And I've had some really good pitchers that that's how they had to compete. It was with an edge all the time, and made the mistake. I've seen the mistake happen where a guy tries to come in and make wholesale changes about how he handles his emotion and his aggressiveness, and tries to just be a little more subdued. It's walking a high wire act all the time of how much do I push, where, how much of that do I need? But I've seen it more often than not. Negatively affect, especially a young pitcher, when you try to pull back the reins and take that emotion away from them. So it's our job to try and find some cues of when maybe it's pushed too far to where he's getting off course, of his effectiveness. But we haven't seen that with him. I thought he did a nice job, even in that last game. Maybe got to him a little bit, but you're going to consistently have issues, whether it's with an opposition or whether it's with an umpire. But you know, we were talking about this just a few seconds ago about that learning experience, and he's learning at the major league level how to handle his emotions. And so far, I think he's done a real nice job.
I'll disagree. He didn't do a nice job in the last game because he got rattled, and you know, it's not to villainize the guy, but I mean, he's got to be able to, when something goes wrong or when the umpire's not giving you the calls, you got to hang into the fight. And he wasn't able to do it. And I don't mind once he got tossed. You know, he went over and barked at the ump. I mean, get your point across. Let him know you care and let him know it matters. I think that's fine. But more the pitching, it snowballed on him. And he's got to be able to hunker down and go get a strikeout, right? Like, get a swing and miss. If you can do that, you don't leave it up to the umpire. Easier said than done, I know. But it's where he's got to go in the maturation process. Some baseball news. COVID still very much a part of Major League Baseball. Sources telling ESPN, no immediate word on the status for tonight's game, but the Yankees were scheduled to play the Rays in Tampa tonight at 7. However, at least 5 Yankees coaches have tested positive for COVID-19. So apparently, and I'm going to tell you, I'm hearing this from a number of different places, there's a lot of friction in Major League Baseball clubhouses between guys who've gotten vaccinated and guys who aren't getting vaccinated because they're having to adhere to all the protocols because everyone's not vaccinated. I think this is a story to watch and see where it goes, because I think you're going to hear more about it. And the Padres, they're touched by it as well. They say that at least a partially vaccinated player tested positive last month. Today, the Padres placed Fernando Tatis Jr., Jerickson Profar, and Jorge Mateo on the injury list due to health and safety protocols. At least one of those players has tested positive. One baseball note not having to do with COVID, the A's are finally in a put-up-or-shut-up position with Oakland. Baseball has allowed them to explore the possibility of relocating. This now starts the clock on whether or not Oakland wants to keep the A's in town. It will certainly, I think, make it crap or get off the pot time for the city of Oakland. Do they give them a new stadium or do they head out? I think expansion, again, looms for all the sports. One of the things and one of the reasons why I believe Major League Baseball is letting them explore where they're going, because you got to fix the A's, and I think you got to fix the Rays before you start taking up spots that they could relocate. Expect the Rays to be the next one you hear something similar to this about, that they start looking and saying, okay, yeah, go look around, because it's put up or shut up time in Tampa for the Rays. I think you'll hear that coming up very soon. Sporting Kansas City has announced that they will be full capacity at Children's Mercy Park beginning on May 29th in their game against the Houston Dynamo. This in accordance with the Wyandotte County Health Protocols. So Sporting Kansas City ready to welcome all of their fans back. That coming on May 29th. We'll see how that goes over the long run. They got a big win, a big come-from-behind win on Sunday. 3 matches in, is it 7 days? They play on Sunday again, or is it 8 days? 8 days, or they play Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember. Is it Sunday again? So that'd be 3 and 8 days, I guess. But they got a Wednesday match tomorrow night. Peter Vermees addressing the media today. I asked Peter about the logistics of deciding, you know, first of all, they have been much better in their set pieces. And one of the things they do, you know, they like that little short kick and then get a different angle. Like, how does that work? Is this called from the bench? Does he make that call? Is it something, you know, on the second set piece you're going to do it? On the right side, we're going to do this? Just basically, how does it go about figuring out how they're going to call those set plays on the set pieces during the game?
There are some set plays that we put in. There's other ones that we're kind of working on all the time, and then we pick and choose. Hey, we're going to try this in this game because we see, you know, maybe we could take advantage of something or maybe a weakness in the other team. But a lot of times it comes from the players. Once in a while, you know, we'll say something from the bench, but a lot of times you're either too far away or, you know, there's enough noise in the stadium that it just becomes really difficult to do. So a lot of times it's kind of choreographed. Hey, we're going to do this on the, you know, in the second half, or we're going to do this at this. And you kind of choreograph it prior to.
All right. And by the way, the next match is on Sunday, so they'll play three matches in 8 days. They got a very good look that was headed over the crossbar, and then they got the header by Ilya to tie the match up. And they have been much more productive, and I think a lot of their moves on the back line, bigger guys on that back line looking to get some goals in the air, that they've been able to come forward on those set pieces, and they've looked a lot more dangerous out of the set pieces. If you can get a goal there, you don't have to be as precise. Missed a lot of scoring opportunities just in the regular flow of the game, but they get one in the set piece that evens it up, takes some pressure on, and then, of course, they win it 2-1 and get away with a victory. I followed up with Vermees about the level of success that they have had so far this year on those set pieces.
There's no doubt that in all so far in the season, we've actually been much more aggressive than we've been in the past. In a way, it's no wonder because we've put a lot of emphasis on it. We've trained a lot of that in training to get our guys ready. And so, again, it's no mistake that it's happening. I also think that we've been, there's another side of it. Even if you look at the last game, the number of set pieces that we had, you know, is indicative of the fact that we were pushing the game. You know, I've always said since I started here as the coach that I want us to push the game. And I thought that we found a way to do that the other night, and we didn't stop. That's a credit to the guys. It was a good game. I thought Austin was good. I think you can't help but look at the number of high-quality chances that we created. There's one thing to dominate possession. There's another thing to be able to have purpose from that possession, and those quality chances were a huge step in the right direction. And the other thing is that it sounds easy, but when you have experience in it, whether it's playing or coaching, to play a man down and then still be able to, you know, break a team down and get the result, it's not an easy thing to do. It's actually really hard. A lot of times teams get galvanized by being a man down and knowing they're up, and they kind of, you know, form this block, and they just say, you're not going to score today. And it becomes really difficult because there's so many numbers in the box. And, you know, our guys, credit to them, they didn't give up, and they kept sniffing around the box and getting in good places, and they took advantage. I mean, I think the second goal is incredibly opportunistic, but more importantly, it's such a hard and difficult header that Gotti makes because of the way the ball's bouncing, and he has to time it just right to kind of catch it as it's coming across his body to one, be able to redirect it, but get the power that he does to beat the keeper is tremendous. So we're definitely pushing in the right direction.
I think they are, and I think the next couple of games will tell us what this one meant. Right? Do they find a way to keep winning? Houston's not a good club, at least according to the table right now. Haven't been that strong the last couple of years. Find a way on this midweek match to get it done. If you're a good team, your depth should be better than their depth. Find a way to win this match, and I think you feel a lot better, because I think there's still a little bit of a, okay, did they just get the lucky red card? They gave up some good scoring opportunities as well. John Pulskamp, the 20-year-old goalie, was up to the task. In particular, after they scored both goals, they gave up runouts right away off the kickoff, and Pulskamp had to come out and make a great save. And I thought that was very impressive, and he looks a lot more. Number one, he doesn't look 20. He looks older than having just turned 20, but that's what he is. And that's a spot where you got a young guy barking at some guys that have played a lot of soccer all around the world, a lot of world experience, and having to put those defenders in place. I was curious and asked him if he's ever been uncomfortable, at least the first couple of times, barking out and being the leader of the defense.
No, not at all. All of the guys at this team are really tight-knit. We have good chemistry with each other. In the years leading before me making my first appearance for the first team, I've got on really well with all the guys. I'm the same way in training, and I've always been this way. So they know that's how I am, and that's how they want me to be, and that's how the coaches want me to be. So it's not awkward at all. They respect me as a player, and know that's part of my job. And if I got to give the guys, you know, a bit of stick, they know that that's part of my job and that that's normal, and they know that they can give it right back to me, and that's just kind of the relationship I have with, I'd say, every single player on this team.
That's good, right? I mean, maybe he should be intimidated, but he's not, and I think that's good news for Sporting Kansas City, and he's played really well. I mean, I think Tim Melia will be the goalie when he comes back, when he's healthy, when he's fit. But I think you feel like, hey, Sporting Kansas City's in pretty good shape with Pulskamp, and you know, the future is bright. And if he continues to play at a very high level, you start to feel like, okay, we've got an asset. We can trade one of these guys. You always want to be strong in net, but you know, certainly if someone else goes down and you're in a spot, you need something, you can get it done. College basketball news: the top international prospect, 6'6" shooter Adama Ball, has committed to Arizona. This is significant. His quote today: Coach Tommy Lloyd and his staff were the key. If you don't remember, Tommy Lloyd got the Arizona job. He has been the longtime top assistant coach at Gonzaga and has been credited with their incredible run of international recruiting. Quote, he recruited me at Gonzaga and offered me the first day on the job at Arizona. He showed me how much he wanted me every step of the way. He has a tremendous track record of developing international prospects into NBA players. I was able to talk to Joel Ayayi and Ronnie Turiaf, among others, who told me all the best about him. Look out, because Arizona, I think, is a program that, because of the warm weather, recruits itself. But now you put one of the top international recruiters in there. Every aspect of talent acquisition has to be something that you're strong at. This is his niche. Now, we'll see, can he handle the regular high school kids? Can he handle the transfer market? I'm sure he's done a lot in the transfer market as well up at Gonzaga. But whether you're Bruce Weber, Bill Self, you've got to have an eye. You know, Svi, a couple of years ago, you know, KU keeping their eyes on the international side. Every coach has to have their tentacles out in high school, in transfer, and in the international market. And that's what Arizona got. And this is a kid that would have been at Gonzaga had Tommy Lloyd not gone down to Arizona. So I know everyone feels like, oh, they're the new UNLV and they're a new blue blood, and Gonzaga, yeah, they're absolutely going to win championships. When you get there, you need to cash, because then you lose your top assistant and maybe that international pipeline that's been making its way to Gonzaga is drying up now that the assistant coach that did all of the recruiting has moved on. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the wide receiver position with the Kansas City Chiefs and building a franchise around the quarterback position. How do you do it? Are the Chiefs the new blueprint that everybody in the NFL is following with their new coaches? We talk NFL football with Kevin Cole from Pro Football Focus.
The program with Seren Petro.
You know, when you're running with Chubbs and Hunt, everybody in the Browns fans are all, that's what we do.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some football. It's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Just told you about it. I-35 in Santa Fe. Online at robertbrogdon.com. Don't mess around spending 4 or 5 hours with a big hassle when it comes to putting your car deal together. Get it done quickly at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, where I bought my last 7 vehicles and counting. Not test-driven. Bought them. 7 of them at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 in Santa Fe, online at robertbrogdon.com. Let's welcome Kevin Cole from Pro Football Focus to our T-Mobile guest line. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm intrigued by one of the things you wrote about the young quarterbacks coming into the league, and everybody, the entire theme of the draft. Well, first of all, if you were watching ESPN for the last, 8 weeks, there was one story. It was 5 quarterbacks in the first round of the draft, and that's all they talked about. And a lot of the coverage of the draft was, and it seemed the theme of a lot of teams were, to not only get the quarterback, but then to make sure that they surrounded him with talent. Why does this seem like such a novel? Why is this a revolutionary idea for these teams? Why wasn't this being done all along?
Yeah, I think it's not just, you know, talent in an abstract sort of sense or anywhere on the team, but I think it's more looking specifically at those positions that are going to enhance the quarterback as much as you can. Yeah, when I looked at it, and yeah, you know, bringing talent onto the team helps the quarterback outperform. I did get some of your typical, you know, snarky responses on Twitter, like, wow, you know, having good players helps the quarterback. But I mean, it really kind of went beyond that, the analysis, because it showed that some teams might think if you run the ball and you play good defense, that'll help protect the quarterback. But I didn't really find that to be the case. I didn't find that having a lot of talent on defense or having talent at the running back position really helped a lot. It's really, you know, the offensive line, specifically pass blocking, and it is the receivers. And the receivers probably on a one-to-one basis have even a bigger impact, because they can really drive things a bit more. So I think that's maybe a place where some teams had missed out before, and teams are really looking to fill in, you know, your stud offensive tackle or something like that. And I think that was a big conversation in the draft with the Bengals and others, what to do. Receiver really seems like a place that people should be taking shots and taking multiple shots to build around their quarterback.
I like that story because I felt like it validated some of the things that I've been talking about. I'll go on in other towns when the Chiefs are playing whatever team and they'll talk about, you know, how the Chiefs were built and this. And I said, well, listen, the first thing they did was they didn't just get the quarterback. But when it was time for him to step in and start, they made sure that he had everything he could possibly want. Yes, he had the bookend offensive tackles, right, the most important offensive lineman. But to your point, they spent $16 million a year on a wideout that, frankly, had been a disappointment but had ceiling, and that was Sammy Watkins. After already having Tyreek Hill and already having Travis Kelce, and I know your cohort, Eric Eager's done a lot, did a story not long ago about the value of the third receiver in particular in the postseason, that's a lot of time. Like, hey, you know, you're playing other good teams, so they can match up 1 and 2. But if you've got a dominant third receiver, that's where you start to be able to have that advantage. I felt like the Chiefs kind of set the blueprint. It wasn't just Mahomes. Yes, otherworldly abilities that for whatever reason people, at least 9 teams, look past. But it's that they gave everything they possibly could to the kid at the expense of their defense, because their defense sucked when he first took over. At the expense of their defense, to make sure that he had every possible opportunity to succeed. It's not just about winning the game, right? It's also about finding out as quickly as you can, is this the right guy? Because there's a lot of people that still think Sam Darnold might be the right guy, but the Jets didn't put anything around him. So if Darnold blows up down in Carolina, the Jets are the morons that didn't get the memo you just sent out.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to say, oh, yeah, you know, everyone knows this is something that teams should do, but I think Darnold's a good example, right? I mean, it's a combination of missing on draft picks that you're hoping to build around him, but they didn't really throw a ton at the position, at receivers specifically, to see if they could help him out, and they had some success with guys like Robbie Anderson, who then end up being let go and then going to Carolina and being successful. So, yeah, one of the big themes of the piece, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit, is that for this 2021 class, it seems like the teams, whether because it's just fortuitous circumstances or actually trying with teams that are drafting up, is they've built around the quarterback a little bit better. Even teams like the Jaguars and the Jets, who are drafting right up near the top, they have a much better circumstance than you would see for quarterbacks who are typically drafted into those top 2 slots.
So who's the team that you think's done the best job of setting up their quarterback that they took this year for success?
I mean, I think the team that's done the best job is probably the Jaguars so far. Now, again, like I said, it's a little bit of fortuitous circumstance that it ended up being that Lawrence has gone in there. I think with Wilson, it's interesting because a lot of it is going to be based upon how a free agent signing like Corey Davis does. Sometimes those work out. Sometimes they don't work out, so I'm a little bit more dubious on that. But if you look at with Lawrence, I mean, they had DJ Chark, who they brought in there. They brought in Laviska Shenault last year, so they have him there. They don't have great offensive linemen, but they at least retain guys who potentially could have hit free agency this year. So they have a core there. Now, coming into this season, I was a little bit disappointed by what they did in the draft this year, especially taking the running back in the first round. But, you know, typically rookies aren't going to have a huge impact anyway. So I think they did a good job coming into this. The question will be, can they continue to build around him? And I know that before Etienne was taken, they said that they were looking at someone like Kadarius Toney, who I'm not huge on, but they at least were looking to build out that receiver core even a bit more. But he ended up being taken by the Giants before they could get him.
All right, I'm curious, do you, like, I can't understand why anybody would hire a defensive coach for a head coach at this point. And it's not that they can't do all the head coaching jobs great. It's just that if you get an offensive coordinator that's really good and he clicks with the quarterback, he's going to immediately get a job somewhere else. And you get that turnstile. Like, out of the quarterbacks that you know, the 5 first-round quarterbacks, I mean, Josh McDaniels is kind of a unicorn in the sense that he seems like he's just going to sit and wait for Bill Belichick to go. So maybe he'll be the one that is different than this. But Fields went to, if he keeps his job, and he's been to 2 playoffs in 3 years, He went to Matt Nagy, who's his offensive coordinator. Trey Lance went to the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan is his offensive coordinator. And Trevor Lawrence goes to Urban Meyer, who presumably will be the bulk of the offensive mindset there. Zach Wilson goes to Robert Saleh, and if they have initial success, the OC, who I don't even know off the top of my head who it is, will be on his way down the road to a head coaching job. Isn't part of putting the talent around him is also putting a play caller around him that is going to be good and is going to be there for him.
Yeah, I think that is important. Although, you know, all else being equal, you want to have the right person as your head coach to make some of these larger strategic decisions. Yeah, in the Jets, you know, they brought Mike LaFleur over from the 49ers. So he's going to bring that Shanahan style of system. It's somewhat similar to what Zach Wilson was running. So I think there is some consistency there. But, you know, there are a lot of different styles and a lot of different potential assistant head coaches you can bring in for your offensive coordinator if you want to stick with one particular system. So I think it's a concern, but you don't want to go so far. And I think someone with Robert Saleh, I think he was a very interesting candidate because he seems to be a forward-looking type of guy. He seems to be someone who wants to make the best decision, not just say, I want these particular guys on my team. And if you look at what the Jets did in the draft, I mean, they had a couple of first-round picks and they had an early second-round pick, and all of those picks went to the offensive side of the ball. So he wasn't someone coming in there to say, you know what, I have this rookie quarterback, but how we're going to do things is I'm the defensive guy. I have the defensive mindset. We're going to draft a whole bunch of defensive players. And like I said, in free agency, you know, they got Corey Davis. They spent some money on that side of the ball too. So I think if you have the right coach, it's more important than which side of the ball that he's on. But obviously defensive coordinators who become coaches are going to be more likely to focus on that side of the ball in general.
Yeah, no, I agree. And listen, it can be – Bill Belichick is a guy that I think, you know, Bill Parcells, they used to say, could coach any position on the field. And I think Belichick's probably there with all the experience that they've got. So it's not to say that the defensive coordinator is dead, but unless you're getting one of those guys that's a proven commodity, I would take the offensive guy to make sure that I know I've got a guy that hopefully can click with my quarterback. And Kyle Shanahan's been considered boy wonder of play calling, and he's had three sub-500 years out of four with the 49ers. Like, if they didn't, you know, get to the Super Bowl, I'm not sure he'd even be the coach right now. Is or should some of the shine, I know it'll come off if he doesn't develop Trey Lance, but should some of the shine be coming off Kyle Shanahan and his prodigies, as you just mentioned, one of them getting a job?
Yeah, I think the problem with Shanahan, and this is something that there's been some signals out there from his very first draft that he had once he finally came over to the 49ers, is the fact that he was put in this position where if he's just out there calling plays, I don't think he's doing an excellent job. He's running that offense. He's doing an excellent job. The problem is he seems to have a lot of influence from what they're doing from a personnel perspective. I mean, there are some anecdotes. I know Peter King was behind the scenes in that first draft that they had when he came over there, and there was a player who was off of the board, a running back, Jonathan Williams, who they brought in, and he put him back on the board because Shanahan wanted him, and they traded up to get him. And of course, he was out of the NFL very quickly. You know, they overbid for someone like Jerick McKinnon when they had there. And then this quarterback move that they just made this draft, I mean, they ended up with Trey Lance in the end. I mean, who knows where Lance would have fallen if they hadn't taken him there. And it just seemed like the process whereby they're going through this, it's just he seems to be really reaching and grasping and maybe have a little bit too much power there. So I think, if anything, the problem with Shanahan has been they've had some bad luck. They've had a lot of injuries with Jimmy Garoppolo. But the problem with him is maybe he has a little bit too much power on shaping that roster, and that's going to come back to bite them, as opposed to what he's doing as an offensive coordinator, where he's just had this really, really poor quarterback talent coming in for Jimmy Garoppolo when he's missed games. I mean, when Garoppolo's been there, they've been good. They've been basically, if you're going to prorate out on a 16-game season, they've been basically a 12-win type of team when Garoppolo has been there.
Am I the only one that thinks Trey Lance looks like he's trying to fix his mistake of not drafting Patrick Mahomes in 17?
There's, you know, that's a mistake that a lot of teams are trying to fix. And when you hear you know, stories about what happened in the 2017 draft. For some reason, every single team was going to draft Patrick Mahomes also if he had just fallen a little bit further. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he was one of those teams saying we made that mistake. Of course, they were all the way up at number two and then back to number three. So they could have grabbed him.
Do you like the receiving talent? I mean, I'm looking at the piece, and at 52.4 receiving WAR is the lowest of the five first-round picks. I like Deebo Samuel. I almost like him as much as a running back, for crying out loud, when they run the reverses and everything with him. But do you like the receiving talent? Do you think it's going to be better than what it's been to this point?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, they also brought in Brandon Ayuk last year. So entering his second year, there's a potential for a leap forward there. I guess my concern with those guys is they're both this – run after catch type, and I think that's a very strong element and a big part of what San Francisco tries to do with their wide receivers. But you know, maybe you'd want to have a little bit more diversity in what those receivers can do. So that would be my only quibble with what they've done there. And of course, it's going to be about George Kittle a lot with that offense and whether or not he can stay healthy. So he wasn't able to stay healthy all of last year. That was a huge factor, and he's really the number one option in that offense.
We're talking right now with Kevin Cole, data scientist from Pro Football Focus here in the program. What do you make of the Chiefs wide receivers? We got a lot of people that, you know, Sammy Watkins and his 421 yards and two touchdowns left, and they're all pulling their hair out going, oh, my God, we got to replace Sammy Watkins. I think they love the idea of replacing the idea of what Sammy Watkins was supposed to be. And listen, he had positives. He'd show up big in playoff games, to Eric Eager's point about the third receiver. Played very well against the 49ers in the Super Bowl and, you know, had big moments in the postseason. He does a great job blocking. I think it's one of the reasons why the Ravens were attracted to him. So I'm not trying to act like the guy can't play. But in this town, like, the knock on the Chiefs draft is that they didn't get a wide receiver earlier and that they really need a wide out. When you and look, they need everything after this year. They only had 23 players under contract for 22, right? So they there's every position that they were thin at, not just wideout. But is Kansas City spoiled with the depth of receivers they've had, or do you agree that, you know, I know they addressed it in the fifth round with a wide receiver, but did they make a mistake in not addressing receivers sooner as far as what they need for this season?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have hurt to have addressed it sooner, but I think it really the big flip from last season to this season is the perception of Mecole Hardman and what role that he can play there. I mean, if we would have heard going into 2020 that Sammy Watkins was going to be gone, I do a lot of work in fantasy football. Also, fantasy football Twitter would have been just beaming with excitement about what Hardman was going to do because he looked really good in limited play as a rookie. But then last season, he just didn't do much. And in particular, as we saw in some of these playoff games, he looked almost a bit lost out there or having some communication problems with Patrick Mahomes. So I think that's the big factor that's driving the angst amongst Kansas City Chiefs fans. It's just they don't have faith in Hardman. And last year, the Chiefs, going into the season, I thought this was going to be a offense where they could spread out the ball a lot. And what ended up happening is it was really one of the most narrow passing games in the NFL. It was just all Kelce and all Tyreek Hill and nothing else that was really going on there. So that leaves them a bit fragile, but I still have faith that Mahomes can pivot and adjust off of that, and maybe Hardman can develop a little bit more this season. But you have heard about, you know, they're after potentially Juju Smith-Schuster in free agency. There's talk about D.D. Westbrook. Maybe they're looking at him. And then obviously they're talking up guys like Byron Pringle, and we'll see what ends up happening there. But I think there's just a little bit of such uncertainty about who else is going to go beyond those top two options, but they have guys who can fill that. And I think maybe we shouldn't be so down on guys like Hardman just because they had a little bit of a rough season and they're a little bit of a sophomore slump.
This is the put up or shut up time though, right? It's year two or year three. I mean, Some receivers can take off in year one, but nobody takes off in year four.
Yeah. This is definitely put up or shut up time. You would have hoped, like I said, for more of a step forward last season, but it's really going to be something where, you know, sometimes these things can be positive feedback loop. So maybe if he starts to get more involved in the game, and I think, you know, they had like these on the sideline type of things, where in that Bills game where Hardman, he had the issue with the muffed punt, and then they got him involved in the game and he started to get into it a little bit more. So maybe it's just a thing where if they do start to spread the ball out a little bit more, if he starts to get more routes out there at all times, a little bit moving up the depth chart with Watkins gone, they can get his head in the game a little bit more this season. I think that's what you're hoping out for, and maybe holding out hope at this point, because they're just not going to have a lot of cap space and a lot of draft capital necessarily going forward to address these things. You're going to have to bring along the guys that you've already spent second round picks on.
If they block better, which they've made a massive investment in their offensive line,
yeah,
that does bode well for the receivers, right? You've got to go through another dot to connect those two dots. It's the quarterback, but if he's in the pocket, not having to run for his life when he's running around, which, you know, we were talking about it earlier with Tim Grunhard, that I think we saw him make a lot of plays on the run, and we just began to think that, oh, yeah, that's just normal. When in reality, you know, he finally got to a point where the Bucs just overwhelmed him, and they got so banged up on the offensive line that he just couldn't make all those plays. Still made incredible throws in the Super Bowl. The diving, you know, horizontal throw where he actually hits the receiver in the hands and he just doesn't come up with it. He was still coming close to making plays. But the reality is, if they take care of him better and he can sit in the pocket longer, then Mecole Hardman's got a better chance to emerge, right?
Yeah. I think the whole passing game has a better chance. I mean, you don't want to react too much to what happened in the Super Bowl. It was one of these perfect storm sort of events on the entire offensive line being blown away. And I don't know if the Chiefs have overreacted, but they certainly haven't underreacted as far as what they've done to build up the offensive line in the offseason. And, obviously they're bringing in Orlando Brown. They're making the huge signing of Joe Thuney and others. So they've really solidified that offensive line. I think that's going to be hugely important, because it's not like Patrick Mahomes doesn't hold the ball. He does hold the ball a lot, but he takes very few sacks because of his ability to, you know, work and to build some extra time for himself. And he also really judges the rush well, which we saw, you know, even in that game, he really didn't take sacks until near the end of that game, even though he was under constant pressure, but he couldn't complete the ball. I mean, he's willing to throw incompletions. He's willing to get the ball out of his hand, even if it has no choice. So obviously those are types of plays where receivers can't make plays. But I think guys like Hardman, again, it just looked like he didn't have his head in the game. So I think that's going to be more important than anything, is he knows, you know, they're counting on him this season, and he can really step up.
You mentioned the work you do, and you've got some great pieces. You can read Kevin's work at Pro Football Focus, PFF.com, and he's got a breakdown of the rookie wideouts I'll get to in a second. But Byron Pringle, you mentioned, like, the way I would describe it, I would use fantasy football to describe the rest of the Chiefs wide receivers. I don't know that there's going to be anybody on the Chiefs roster that you want on your fantasy team other than Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, but that doesn't mean you can't get 500 yards and 4 or 5 touchdowns each from Byron Pringle, Mecole Hardman, and DeMarcus Robinson, right? Which, if that's the case, that's a lot of productivity there. But if anybody's going to replace Sammy Watkins and maybe be the guy that I think the Chiefs had a vision of being Sammy Watkins, it's Byron Pringle. I mean, how much hope should you have for an undrafted guy that was old when he got to the league having some kind of breakout season?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have a lot of hope. I'm not sure, because I have trouble, you know, parsing whether or not the talk about Pringle is because they really believe in him that much, or if they're looking around the receiver room and they're thinking to themselves, you know, like trying to get as much positive energy as possible for some guys who could step up and be that option. I mean, I think it's definitely a possibility. What you see with the Chiefs, what they're normally able to do is, like I said, Kelce has his role, Hill has his role, and then you can get these one-off big plays from different receivers. So that's probably going to continue to be the model this season. And the real question is whether or not the top two guys can stay healthy, and then those other guys have to step into a role where they're being relied upon a lot more often. I mean, maybe Pringle could be that guy, but it's really just a wait and see at this point.
We're talking to Kevin Cole. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. You can find him online. Book an appointment right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Kevin, I will start you with this. Just first thing that pops in your mind, where is Aaron Rodgers in 21? What team, or is it someplace outside the NFL?
I think he's back. He's back with the Packers.
Okay. All right. Is Baker Mayfield a franchise quarterback, or will he become a franchise quarterback in your mind?
Yeah, I think he's going to be the guy for them, if only because they've done such a good job building around him that he's going to stick around.
But would you call him a franchise quarterback?
Franchise adjacent. Does that work?
I will take that. I like that. All right. Do the Raiders ever make a conference championship game with John Gruden?
No. I'll throw that out there pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was quick. That didn't take much time at all. All right, and finally,
I mean, he's got the 10-year contract though. So yeah.
Yeah, he does. That's why it's a legit question. He's going to get a lot of bullets to fire at it. Finally, does Urban Meyer work in Jacksonville? However you want to define making it work in Jacksonville, does he have success with the Jaguars?
You know, I don't have the most confidence in him, but it really helps when you got Trevor Lawrence as your number one pick. So a lot of good things can happen there. So I'm going to say he's going to work for a while, but I don't know if it's for the long haul.
I like that. Yes, for a while. I'll take it. Kevin, really appreciate it. Love all the work you guys do at Pro Football Focus. It's great stuff. It's totally worth the subscription. We encourage everybody to get one. Thanks for the time, buddy, and we hope to talk to you again soon down the road.
All right, thanks so much for your support.
All right, you bet. Kevin Cole for Pro Football Focus. We will take a break, come back, wrap things up here with the kicker.
The program with Soren Petro.
He is not a journalist in the normal sense of the word. He's a columnist, and he's a person who dispenses opinion.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
First, though, the good sense end of the hour question. I asked, how many players have had a walk-off hit in the World Series with their team trailing? Soren, hazard a guess.
Walk-off hit
of any type. Team trailing in the World Series.
Well, Joe Carter did it.
That's one. 1993.
In any World Series game, not to end the series or...
The way Curtis wrote this, it just said a walk-off hit in the World Series with their team trailing. But you know Curtis, he's kind of a doofus.
I'll say three.
Try again. Go two higher.
Five.
Nailed it.
Thank you. That was a great clue, by the way.
Thank you. Five, the people who have done it. Cookie, I don't know how to say this guy's
Rojas?
No. Lavaghetto. In 1947, Dane Orge in 1980.
Dane Orge.
Orge.
Played for the Royals.
Sure. Kirk Gibson, 1988. Joe Carter, as you mentioned, whose daughter I went to high school
Kirk
with.
Oh, Kirk Gibson against Eck. I should have got that
and
one.
And Brett Phillips, old friend, last year.
That's right.
Dane Orge, 71 today. Happy birthday. Sorry for messing up your name.
Brett Phillips swings the axe bat. The axe handle bat.
Sure. He swings some kind of bat.
I talked to him about it. Swings the axe bat.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that.
Thanks for listening to the interviews we do here.
It's spring training week is normally a long one. There's a lot of moving parts.
Good sense of what we were playing for there. You can get it founded right here in Lenexa, Kansas, locally owned and operated. 30% more meat right now, slicing the meats and cheeses right in front of you. It's the freshest sandwich you're going to find. They bake that bread fresh twice each day as well. Make sure you're part of the loyalty club. You get 10% back. Good sense, their party trays, great way as well. If you're going to have some folks over, get the Good Sense party tray. GoodSenseSubs.com and on the Good Sense app. Today, leave you with this. LeBron James is going to give his injured right ankle one more day to rest tonight, so he's not going to play against the Knicks, starting a return tomorrow against the Houston Rockets. Some people speculating that, you know, the Knicks, very tough defensive club, that they're like, yeah, let's not have him banged around by the Knicks. Let's wait. The Rockets, they're trying to lose, so let's just go ahead and play him against the Rockets. Okay, let's see where it is. One way or another, is this the end of LeBron James? I keep posing that question. Injuries happen. Like, you don't get old overnight, and then you do get old overnight, right? And one of the things that happens is you don't come back from injuries. And it's a sprained ankle. Like, some guys miss a couple of games. He's been out for weeks, and then he's back, and then he's got to sit out again. Like, this is how the old suddenly are done, right? And he is getting up there in years. Maybe they'll be able to make a run, he and Anthony Davis. But watch LeBron James, because this might be the last time you see him playing at the highest level. Injuries are not something that old people come back from well. And the fact that the Lakers have been having to mess around with this, to me, I would venture to say this is probably his last run at a championship. They better cash on it this year. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Back at it tomorrow at 2:00.